Hello and welcome to Film School for Dad, the podcast where I attempt to correct my father's lifetime squandered on altruistic pursuits and misappropriated interests, all to the neglect of a proper education in popular culture. I'm Harvey.
Yep, and I'm Dad.
And each week we'll watch a movie that Dad hasn't seen but probably should have and get his opinion on whether it deserves its place in cinematic history. What is the name of the film we're discussing today, Dad?
I believe it's Roger Dodger.
Okay, Dad, well, I assume you probably haven't heard of Roger Dodger.
I am completely and utterly clueless as to what it could possibly be.
All right, what if I name the director and a couple of stars? We'll see if you know any of them. The director's name is Dylan Kidd.
No.
Campbell Scott, producer and main lead actor.
No.
What about Jesse Eisenberg?
Vaguely.
So you've heard that name, do you think?
I think so.
Okay, interesting, because he's a big star now. How about Jennifer Beal?
Yes, I've heard of that.
She was in Flashdance, would probably be.
I haven't seen Flashdance.
No.
But I know the name. But again, I don't think I could point her out in a mugshot.
Well, you will be able. You'll probably remember her. She's a pretty good-looking lady. So.
Oh, good.
Yeah. She was in Flashdance. I mean, you're not going to cast an ugly woman in Flashdance,
no,
are you?
No, I assume not.
All right. Well, I'll do the intro to the movie, and then we'll get into it. Roger Dodger was a 2002 independent film written and directed by first-time filmmaker Dylan Kidd. It stars Campbell Scott in a very underrated performance as the titular Roger and Jesse Eisenberg in his very first starring role. Legend has it that Dylan Kidd approached Campbell Scott in a restaurant and handed him the script for Roger Dodger completely unsolicited. And Scott's curiosity was piqued, even though he was probably very annoyed to be interrupted, as you can imagine. But he was curious about the tenacity of someone who'd come up and just dump a script on his table.
Someone he didn't know, I take it.
Yeah, a complete stranger, yeah. So he, for some reason, decided, I'll give this one a read. And he loved the script. And not only did he agree to star in it, but he agreed to produce it and get it funded and everything. So he was a driving force behind getting it made. Oh, here's someone who's in the movie that you might have heard of, Isabella Rossellini. Come on, she's like ancient now.
Where would I know her from?
She was in a movie called Blue Velvet, I know, a long time ago, which is a David Lynch movie.
I'm afraid I'm coming up with a blank there.
All right. Well, it won a bunch of awards at independent festivals, mostly for first-time director Dylan Kidd and his screenplay, but also the actors got a little bit of love as well. It received, I would say, polarized audience response, but positive because of the nature of the movie, and you'll get this when we see it. You either loved or hated it, basically. More people loved it than hated it, I like to think, anyway.
Well, what you mean is not many people were lukewarm about it.
Yeah. So when it was released, Roger Dodger skyrocketed Jesse Eisenberg to fame, making him a household name in Hollywood within a few short years. He eventually starred as Mark Zuckerberg in The Social Network, which may be where you've heard of him.
Could be, because I've at least seen bits of that.
Yeah, he was cast as Lex Luthor in some of the Superman films, so not the Gene Hackman one that you would have probably seen clips of, but the newer ones, which no one liked, mm-hmm. and everybody hated Jesse Eisenberg in them, but getting cast as Lex Luthor is a big deal. It's a major character.
Yeah.
And he headed up the popular Zombieland films that I think there's two or three of them now, so it's like a franchise. You know who Mark Zuckerberg is, right? Obviously.
Of course I do, yeah.
And you know Lex Luthor, the character. So, you know, he's certainly had a very big career. Without Roger Dodger, I don't think he would have got started. The reason Roger Dodger is special to me, though, is because it came at a particular time in my life. So you can imagine 2002, I would have been, what, 30?
30.
How old was I in 2002? I was 25 in 2000, so 27.
Yeah.
And I'd just met Timbo and, you know, I'd sort of made an effort to shake off my natural shyness and attempt at least to engage the fairer sex. So
right.
some of the themes and ideas explored in Roger Dodger were to me, informative, although possibly that was somewhat misguided, as you'll see when we watch the movie.
I find that fascinating.
It's interesting. It's part of the reason that I'm not sure whether you'll respond to it in the same way, being at a very different stage of life and possibly not even going into that stage when you were 27, I'm not sure.
Reverse the digits and you're closer to my age. So,
well, that's right, exactly. Yeah. It reminds me of, you know, when we watched Magnolia and you responded to Tom Cruise's role and said that that's very unrealistic. And I said, there's real people who do that, you know, those seminars and whatever. This is a bit like that, where I wonder if you'll be able to identify with the character because maybe you haven't been in that world, you haven't met people like that or whatever, I don't know, but it'll be interesting. But yeah, anyway, it was the kind of film that I really like as well. It's a character study and it sits on the razor's edge of morality, portraying a damaged character who's potentially doing, you know, real emotional harm to others, but it doesn't sit in judgment or moralize about the characters. It just shows them how they are. And I don't really want to say much more because I don't want to give it away or, you know, spoil it in any way. So,
okay, well, we'd better have a look at it.
Yeah, let's fire it up and we'll see what you think. All right, well, we just watched Roger Dodger. First reaction, Dad, but well, actually repeat what you just said.
Oh, I just said you mightn't get half an hour's talk out of it.
Why do you feel like that?
Oh, I just feel it was a pretty straightforward movie. I got quite a few laughs from it.
Yeah, I noticed you laughing. That was a good sign.
Had a good chuckle. I enjoyed it. It was amusing, but, you know, relatively shallow.
Mm.
And as I said, straightforward. So I didn't ever expect going to be any twists or surprises, and
it's not a mystery movie.
No, it pretty much played out as I thought it would. The two main actors were both very compelling characters, and absolutely kept you in the movie. Everyone else was there to make up the numbers, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's genius casting though. With at least those two leads, but I think almost everyone in the movie is quite well cast.
Yes, well, I've known a few people like Roger.
Yeah.
I've felt sorry for them in real life and I felt sorry for him.
Well, you definitely feel sorry for him at certain points.
Oh, he's extremely irritating, of course.
Well, that was, I think, what made the audience reaction polarizing. It was whether or not you could tolerate Roger long enough to get some sort of empathy for him. If you didn't have that, he's really just a dickhead.
Yes, but I wasn't talking about empathy as such. I was talking about feeling sorry for him because he's not a person who would attract empathy as such. The shallowness of him and the shallowness of his life as portrayed. I know it's nightlife mainly, but
well, not really. There's quite a lot of his work life.
I was going to say, you could tell from the snippets of his work life that was pretty unfulfilling as well.
Mm.
As I say, we've all known people like that, I expect. I certainly have.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think part of the reason I was attracted to the movie then was because I was hanging out with Timbo and he was saying all that kind of junk.
The three stages of it, of the initiation that he tried to take the young fellow through, were cliches almost.
I think what made it more riveting for me is the way it was ramping up, and I had no idea if the film was going to have any boundaries on where it would go. It's 20 years later, and I think morality and these kinds of things and sexual fluidity is a lot more acceptable now and a lot more talked about. But back then, there were no movies portraying a guy like Roger, like, other than in a sort of cardboard cutout cliched sort of way, as the guy that gets slapped by the girl in the bar or, you know, that kind of stuff.
Really? I find that a surprising thing to say. Maybe what about something like Elvin Purple?
Who's that?
That was a Australian movie back 20 years, before you were born probably.
Right, yeah.
But it was... yeah, it was just about a sex romp type,
right? Yeah,
thing.
But was it treated dramatically?
Equally shallow, and I, I've seen parts of movies that have had the initiating the teenager into sex as a part of it. I haven't seen one that it's the entire subject matter.
No, it's a trope. There's movies like teen comedies where all the guys are finishing high school and they get together and pledge to lose their virginity. Well,
it's not unlike real life.
No, I think it's quite realistic.
Yeah, that's what kids do.
But generally, I don't know, 40-something guy like Roger wouldn't be the one leading them through it. I think that's where this is novel.
Right. Well, I actually had in my life a great friendship with an uncle.
You did.
And that took me on a bit of a, not an initiation as such, but a bit of a tour of parts of life that I may not have come into touch with to that point.
Okay. Well, I mean, there's a parallel there. Yeah.
It certainly wasn't about initiating me to sex, but it was about showing me the other side of life. So it sort of rang true in a way to me. But I didn't find the older guy and the younger guy as surprising.
You didn't think there was a moral line being crossed, like even from the first moment when Roger decides to take him to a bar in the first place?
I didn't look at it through a moral lens, to be honest.
See, that's what, for me, it was why it felt like a really edgy movie because...
I mean, he was clearly an amoral person.
No, I mean, but what I mean is that in my experience at that time and probably still now, in real life, when the kid turns up and says to his uncle, show me how to get laid, the uncle says, you're learning good time, you don't need me for that, you know, go back to your mother.
But he was asking him because... his mother had basically told him he's a ladies' man.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that was the irony of it.
Yeah, that's
right. I just took it as ironic. I didn't look at it through a moral lens.
Did you think Roger's really a ladies' man?
Well, he's one of those guys who thinks he is.
Well, he said he got laid every night, but, you know, towards the end he sort of admits that's not true, a bit flippantly.
We all know that the guys who brag the most usually get the least, so... I just took it like that.
Yeah, I suppose so.
He clearly managed to get laid by the boss, and of course it turned out that she was working her way through the whole office as well. So
yeah. I think that's something I got from it this time around that I probably didn't appreciate when I first saw it back 20 years ago, which is that I can't remember her name now, but Isabella Rossellini's character is actually the superior predator. She's the one who's working her way through the office, getting them to lie about it systematically one by one.
Yeah.
And then taunting him. When I first saw it, I thought he was in the wrong in that relationship because he wouldn't back off and she was telling him off and she was in the right, which is a strange way to look at it now that I've seen it again. I'm like, wow.
If she was using him.
So, yeah, I mean, I suppose... in a way, that's a trope of film too, where if you're going to have a bad character, you've got to have a worse character just so that the bad character isn't the worst one.
He crossed the line by getting hold of her key, and that was clearly didn't suit the arrangement that she wanted, which was move on to the next one and the next one and the next one.
Do you think his psychoanalysis of the girls, you see probably two or three scenes, where he kind of tries to break him down. Well, none of them ever admit that he's got it right.
No. Well, he hits a few nails on the head. Of course he does, but in a very unpleasant way.
And he's just describing complete cliches, whether or not it's really
correct.
That
black and white. He's going to hit a few nails on the head, depending on who he's talking to.
Yeah, except that he's completely insulting them
at the
same time.
Of course he is, because he's just throwing stuff at them out of his head that's it's generic stuff, so some of it's going to hit the mark with any individual, and other parts of it are going to completely insult them and be way off the beam. So
I mean, to some extent it's like those preachers that get up on stage and they pretend to cure people, and you know, those types of things, like that kind of skill where you can quickly observe. I think he was good at observing, at least, if nothing else. He was perceptive and not stupid, but
far from stupid. But that's the great pity of it, why you feel so sorry for him. I mean, what a waste of a life.
It depends how much you like sex.
Yeah, but I think the sex is, the point of the sex with him is it's just an obsession.
to deal with his insecurities or whatever.
Yeah. To fill the void. And that's the way it came across to me, that I've never seen a character with so little depth in it from that point of view.
The thing that I think this time around I picked up on a little bit more was his motivations. And I don't think they're as shallow as you're saying, because his relationship with his sister and the things, the revelations that he has about her, obviously family's important to him. And the sister is what motivates him to show Nick around and help him. If you watch it really carefully, which of course, because I've seen it a few times, I can focus on it. There's a moment, I can't remember what Nick says, but he says something about Roger's sister. And Roger has this moment where he goes, you know what, fucker, I'm gonna screw this kid up and you know, take him to a bar or whatever. But there's a specific moment, and it's motivated by his relationship with his sister, which we never really learn that much about.
Other than it's not a good one.
Other than they don't speak. Yeah. And then the end of the film is him reconciling with his sister, to an extent at least. And I think that's an important, like, for the sister being on camera, what, 6 seconds or something, and being such a core relationship, it's pretty clever writing.
Did you take that as a reconciliation, though?
Partial, yeah.
I just took it as a desperately worried mother who finally had to come looking.
Yeah, but he sends Nick home. It's sometime later. We don't know for sure how long later it is. He's made some excuse to come and visit, hasn't he?
It was in his apartment, wasn't it?
Well, I don't know.
His sister appeared.
Nick must be at school back home. He didn't go to school in New York.
I took that to be his college freshman.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. It could have been, I guess. The fact that he's still in at home in that scene is what my whole theory hinges on, which is that...
No, well, I didn't take him to home. I'm pretty sure his sister walked into his apartment.
Nah, I think it's the other way around. I think it's Nick was going home at home where the sister lives, and Roger's come to visit because he
where his mother lives
has been thinking about the sister and misses Nick and feels no connection, because it's a juxtaposition in the movie. Okay. It shows that shot of him, that really long shot where he's just looking vacantly and sitting on the couch.
Yeah,
and to me that was like saying Roger is lonely. It doesn't make much point at all if they're still in New York, so that would be disappointing if that was true. But I don't know. I'll watch it again. We'll see. Yeah. Maybe I'll do an addendum to the recording if I can work it out one way or another. All right, hold up. I normally wouldn't interrupt the flow of the conversation, but we have to settle this. So this is Harv, the editor from the future, and I'm going to check the footage. So just hang on a sec. We're going to bring up Roger Dodger, and let's see if we can find any evidence. Okay, so Jesse Eisenberg is riding home from school or college, depending on which truth comes out to be correct. He comes in. Roger's with his mother. She says...
Look who dropped by for a visit.
Look who dropped by for a visit. So pretty conclusive there. I think we've settled it. And not only that question, we've also settled the question of who is the teacher and who is the student in this film school? And I don't want to be arrogant. I don't want to say I told you so, but I did tell you so, and I was correct. And I think we can just assume I always will. But, to me that was, you know, one of the sort of more subtle and deep parts of the story, which is, you know, that his family relationship, obviously, with his father and his
Don't get me wrong. I'm agreeing it's clearly potential reconciliation happening, but I didn't take it to be saying it had happened.
Roger had initiated it.
Was simply saying that it had thawed to the point where at least they were getting together, you know.
So did you find, given it's a cast of almost exclusively unlikable characters except for probably Nick, did you find that was a turnoff?
Well, the overwhelming thing for me was that I found it amusing. Mm-hmm. And I found it amusing from start to finish, and so that would have dominated my response to it. Mm-hmm. Did I stop and think, were there any nice characters at all other than Nick? I took him to be the likable young man in a sea of unlikable people, albeit people that you had some empathy for in some cases.
Yeah. Well, like I said, yeah. I think during the movie, while we were actually in the middle of it, I said, I just realized I used to be empathetic towards the Nick character and feel like I related to, to him. And all of a sudden I realize, holy shit, I'm fucking Roger now. I'm Uncle Roger. Like I'm never going to be Nick again. That's for sure. So, yeah. But well, I do. I think I did empathize with Roger Moore this time because I felt like his behavior came from pain. And I think whenever someone's behavior comes from pain, it's not excusable, but it's understandable. And
yeah, partly, but an asshole's still an asshole.
Yeah, you'd still avoid him, you know, like you wouldn't hang out with him. You probably wouldn't invite him to your parties. But at the same time, you've got to give some people the chance to reform as well. So, you know, I mean, I've always been torn about this in life. I've hung out with a whole bunch of dickheads, like, really, to be honest.
Well, I'm happy to give people a chance to reform, but it's not my responsibility to reform them. So I'm not going to respond negatively if they try to reform.
No, of course not.
But equally, I'm not going to have assholes hanging around me all the time.
Yeah, well, maybe I'm a little too tolerant of that.
I think you probably are.
Sometimes. Yeah. I feel like, well, if you're just hanging around with perfect people all the time, it's a little bit boring, and B, you're not serving those people.
That's a stretch to go from assholes to perfect. There are things in between.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking about two extremes. So, yeah. Obviously, everybody's in the middle somewhere. Like, there's no one who's a complete, well,
the vast majority.
They possibly are. Like,
the vast majority of us are in between. I would hope I'm not an asshole, and I know I'm not perfect, but somewhere in between.
I hope I've got
more on the positive side of the ledger than the negative.
Yeah, you've got some good references, don't worry.
Yeah. And I think the vast majority of people are probably in that boat within the limitations of the human condition generally.
Maybe the predisposition to try to reform other people is avoiding working on yourself.
It's a possibility. There could be something in that. Yeah,
there could be. I think if it'd be interesting to hear a psychologist talk about Roger, that's for sure.
I think he'd find him an absolute classic type, wouldn't he?
I was just watching a video today that talked about, what's it called, borderline personality disorder, and I think he seems to just exhibit a lot of qualities of that.
Yeah.
Did you get, because you've been in advertising before, did you get offended by his characterization of what advertising is?
I found it amusing.
Yeah. You think it's true?
Oh, there's elements of truth, but
come on, it's pretty true. It's not the only way to sell a product, but it is the way a lot of brands do it.
What, make you feel lousy first?
Yeah, showing young teenagers trysting on the beach drinking Coca-Cola.
It is the effect of a lot of product advertising.
Definitely. Yeah. Brand advertising more, like the big brands
advertising
seem to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you sell cigarettes, though, really? You got to do something, right? Like, here's a product that kills you. Now, here's a reason to smoke.
that film did a pretty good job of selling cigarettes.
Oh, by God, did he smoke a lot?
Yeah.
He must have. I mean, I don't know. I guess you can smoke cigarettes.
The only time he looked happy.
Yeah, that's right. It was good, though. Like, there was something really kinetic about the fact that he was always lighting up or getting a drink, you know, like the restlessness of it. It was part of the character, I think.
He couldn't stop.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he was just obsessively always moving and thinking and looking around and touching something.
No, he couldn't stay still for a minute. God knows how much sleep he got in an average day, but wasn't much.
Not much, yeah. So that scene when she gives him a kiss, that was the only bit this time around where I went, that just didn't seem realistic to me. In fact, that either of them would show any genuine sexual interest in a kid that looked that young, not just, I mean, being 16, he could be a footballer, like a big sort of masculine, look 25 years old or something. Maybe it would be more.
It's a long time since I was a virgin.
But, right. Well, I'm 46.
I thought the
point. yeah, I realized that.
I would have thought the point of that was that it was the fact, it was just simply the attraction came out of the fact that he said he was a virgin. And
that's how they portrayed it.
He was a cute looking kid. It wasn't like cradle snatching or anything like that. She just, I think it was a genuine act of affection. That's the way I took it. She wanted him to experience it. And she wanted, we'd just been discussing how shallow most of the characters were or unlikable. Her point was, I'm going to do something that's going to make a person remember me forever.
Mm.
And that's what she did.
Yeah, which is quite a narcissistic thing to do.
Well, it is, yeah.
When you think about it.
Yeah. But that was why she did it. That was
it made, might have other consequences
for
it.
That was made pretty clear. She was the first serious kiss of his life, and don't you forget that kid, you know.
What do you think the movie's trying to say? Is Roger to be pitied? Is he a sad character?
I think it's a relatively lighthearted portrayal of a cliche in life.
Yeah.
I don't think it's asking you to think too deeply about it.
I don't know. I reckon Dylan Kidd wrote a script that was exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
And then Campbell Scott elevated it to a level where he made the character more real than it was intended to be, yeah. and probably more funny, or at least as funny as the script would have been.
Yeah, but it's definitely trying to depict a lifestyle that is very shallow.
But shallow lives with pain and motivation behind it in the background that you never get to discover.
It's a comment about how shallow life can be if you let it. Maybe I'm being moralistic saying that, I don't know. But that's the way it came across to me. As I say, I felt sorry for him in particular. I didn't really turn my mind to whether I needed to feel sorry for some of the other characters.
But I actually think now you wouldn't be able to make that movie because, you know, we've had like Me Too and all this sort of women's movement stuff. And I think now there'd have to be more slapping. There would have to be more the woman has a victory over Roger type stuff where...
Yeah,
he doesn't win. He never wins, right? Like it never gives you the impression what he's doing is ever going to work or get him to whatever the end goal, you know, the ultimate goal or whatever, however he refers to it.
One thing I did like about it was made without any actual sex scenes as such. Mm. It had a couple of little titillating moments.
Mm. It was pretty restrained in what was shown, and I think
it could have been. Yeah, it could have been an R-rated movie pretty easily.
Well, you've got to take into account, though, also the scene which is so close to like a date rape scene, and it takes it a lot further than I'm comfortable with. Like, you know, you're talking about Nick, the character you're supposed to care about.
He's setting up a rape. Yeah.
And Nick's ready to go. Like, he's really thinking about it, you know, and he decides not to, and that's good, but he thought about it for a very long time and got a lot further down the process, if you could call it that, than you should.
Showing the ropes to a kid was clearly something that he'd not done before and wasn't familiar with. As I say, I didn't look at the thing through a moral compass so much. It was quite clearly a crime could have been committed. Yeah. I took it all as being pretty thoughtless rather than evil.
I don't say it was evil, but I'm just saying that, you know, looking at it through the lens of today's woke society or whatever we're in.
And, of course, the kid responded in the correct way.
Eventually.
Well.
I'm going to have a quick peek first and then
he thought about it and realized it would be wrong.
Yeah, but he thought about it for a long time.
He
took off some of her clothes first.
Yeah, but he's a kid that never had sex. So, I think you need to give him a bit of latitude.
Oh, I do.
Having been put in that situation.
I think that was showing how Roger had corrupted him to an extent. You know, perfectly. That's what the point of that was.
It was.
You know, he felt pressure even that, like, if he left that room without being able to say to Roger,
no,
I got it done.
The corruption was on the mirror.
Yeah, well, there was that too. that little subplot there. Yeah.
Yeah. That was the low point for Roger's behavior. He then agreed to take him to the brothel.
Yeah.
He couldn't have picked a much more basic brothel either.
Well, I don't know. I've only ever been to one and I didn't go in. Well, I left. I left empty-handed.
It wasn't your classy strip club, that's for sure.
I went to the classiest one in Melbourne, thank you very much. Top of the town, I went in, I got a drink. I was like, I looked around. And I was like, holy shit, this definitely isn't for me. And I walked out.
Did you?
Yeah.
I've had some interesting chats in brothels.
Really?
They're not the worst place to have a chat.
You were just accompanying your friend who was
Of course.
Okay. I've
friends, plural, usually.
I've waited in a car for a friend while right. he visited a brothel, which is not a fun time at all. Like, I don't recommend that at all as a night out.
Certainly never parted with any cash to participate, yeah. other than to buy a drink, which is just the currency of the place.
Oh, these revelations just keep coming, don't they, Dad? What else don't I know about you? I remember when I turned 18 and you said, what are you going to do for your 18th birthday, your 18th birthday? And I said, the first thing I'm going to do, Dad, is I'm going to go to a strip club. And you said, well, I've never been to one of those places. Well, I would never do that.
I might. Oh, yes, I would have been.
You did. I remember because I repeat it to other people now. My dad's never been to a strip club.
Well, maybe.
That might have been a white
maybe
lie.
I hadn't been by that stage, but I think I had.
Well, that would have been when I was 18,
In fact, I'm certain I had because I certainly had been in Sydney.
Right, okay. Yeah. Oh, well, maybe you were just trying to discourage me from wasting my birthday.
I think we're off the subject.
We're definitely off the subject. Mm. I did have one more question that I think the movie poses. Do you feel like the movie was saying that Roger actually overall helped Nick, or did he do some kind of harm?
That's a good question. He did some harm, but he helped him in doing it. He had some bad experiences that he will learn from. Roger had the potential to do Nick a lot of harm.
Yeah.
But maybe that's the way it finished, the way it did, to assure us that he sort of saw the error of his ways a bit.
Yeah. Well, that and also Nick obviously has a newfound confidence. He's about to speak to the girl. Mm. And the movie, I love the way it does it because it pauses before he says anything.
Yeah.
But it leaves you to interpret it. And the way I interpret it is that he had something to say. He was going to say something pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it was going to, you know, he was probably going to be successful, right? Like, so you've seen that transformation.
Well, I think he was going to say something sincere rather than throw a line. And that was the point I took from that.
Possibly. Or the other thing is, you know, Roger had said, "It does, who gives a fuck what you say? It doesn't matter. It's not going to make any difference what you say.
Just
say something."
Yeah.
Maybe that was the point. It was like, well, we won't show you what he says because you already know that the rules of Roger say that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I don't know. You could interpret it that way. But I think it was saying he was more confident at the end of it somehow. Yeah. Yeah. Like, he's different. Like, the way he's got his hair and everything in that.
But the difference was that Roger had come round to steering him in the right direction rather than some superficial arrangement. So he was, the light had gone on for Roger as well a bit, I think.
Mm. As I said, Dylan Kidd, first-time director, wrote the movie. Obviously a passion project for him. He got in front of Campbell Scott and got it all made. It would have taken a lot of will.
Yep.
What do you think happened to him after that? Do you think he went from strength to strength or just fizzled out? Or?
Do I think that would have helped or set back his career? Mm. I wouldn't see any reason why he wouldn't have gone from strength to strength.
And that's what I thought. You know what?
No.
He made a couple other movies. They were complete flops.
Okay.
They were not even remotely similar in tone. Like he didn't even capitalize on that sort of edgy tone. Or even the visual style, really.
Okay.
He made a couple of conventional sort of romantic comedies, one that I know of that was called
Who knows?
Yes, I think.
Who knows what the reasons for that are?
I'm just flabbergasted.
They could be anything in his life. Chris, as you know, we haven't done one of these for a while now, and that's because of things that have happened in our life. I wouldn't see any reason why it would have propelled him to great fame either. I'm just saying.
Yeah, well, the way I look at it, I figure possibly Campbell Scott had a lot more to do with that movie being successful than Dylan Kidd. Dylan Kidd had a script and an outline of what was going to happen, and I think maybe Campbell Scott elevated it.
Was it successful at the box office?
I had a look at that. It earned $2 million or something worldwide, like almost nothing. So
I was going to say that's not much.
It probably would have exceeded its budget because it's obviously
probably made a profit.
Yeah. All right, let's give it a score and we can wrap up.
Well, I think it's I can't rate it too highly. I enjoyed it.
Before you give a score, can I just remind you that Roger says that's just spastic enough to be charming. Now give you a score. Because that line, when I heard it again, I was like, yeah. I used to say that to Timbo all the time after we saw that movie for about 2 years.
Yeah. I think I'll give it a 6.
A 6? All right, I'll take a 6.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, it's a fairly, it's a fair bit higher than that, probably 8.5 or something.
So. Yes, I know.
But I feel, I still feel like there is a difference given the time. 20 years later, back then it felt really edgy and it, like it was dealing with topics that weren't spoken about as much. Mm-hmm. Although to some extent, if you go back 10 more years, movies dealt with darker topics like that, you know. So, and men could be portrayed more as ladies' men or whatever.
Yeah.
But now you can't have a ladies' man in a movie, like a genuine one who really thinks like that, because it's, you sort of have to show
politically incorrect
women being strong as a balance now. And I'm not against that. It's fine. It's just, it's a bit less fun. Like you can see how much fun it was when Roger was just being unabated, a complete misogynistic.
I mean, that's a big
ladies' man.
That
type.
Is a big picture view of it. I mean,
yeah. I wonder, it's hard to know.
I think you're probably overstating that a little bit.
Possibly. It is 20 years, though.
The Rogers of the world are still around. We know that.
Yeah, but we have Gen Z now. I mean, we're not talking about our generation, or your generation, my generation, even the one below that. We're talking about.
No, the problem for them would be they wouldn't laugh at it.
Yeah, that's I don't know if they would. I think they probably wouldn't laugh as much.
They might even take offense.
Yeah. But anyway, I enjoyed watching it. I enjoyed it as much, I think, this time around as I did the first time. And I'm glad we got an opportunity to watch it together. Yeah, that was awesome.
I was entertained by it. So,
oh, well, it could be worse.
It could be.
All right, Dad, until the next one.
Yep.
Thanks for watching it with me.
Yep. Cheers. Thanks, Chris.